Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. We are conducting an exclusive interview with Carrie Brown, an international authority in Windows and a widely acknowledged networking expert. He's also a Microsoft Client Operating System's Windows Desktop Experience Most Valuable Professional. Today, we will mine Carrie's considerable expertise in Windows Vista. Carrie, considering your very busy schedule, we thank you for doing this interview with us today.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you for inviting me.
Carrie, you have a long history with wide expertise in client operating systems, and especially Windows Vista. Can you overview the Windows Vista product suite?
Well, that's a very broad question. We could probably spend most of the day just on the Vista product suite. It's the current Microsoft desktop or end-user operating system. And there are several editions, but they can be broadly classed into two categories. There's the consumer editions and the business editions. In my work, I concentrate mostly on the business editions, which are Vista Business, Vista Ultimate, and Vista Enterprise. The consumer editions are Vista Home Basic and Vista Home Premium. There's other editions that are variations of those due to regulations and requirements in other countries. But basically, there's the five editions. To go into the details between the editions, that would take a lot longer than we have for this interview. But from an IT perspective, the main difference between the home and the business is in the networking features and Active Directory integration. Only the business versions can be joined and managed by an Active Directory domain.
So that's a really good overview, and it kind of gives us a snapshot, and especially for our audience who will be IT pros who will be installing or managing these kinds of platforms. So going on then, what are your five top tips for IT pros who have to install Windows Vista?
Well, the first thing for an IT pro, you have to make sure that you're comfortable and familiar with Vista yourself before you even think about deploying it to end users. You want to run it yourself as your everyday operating system. You want to run it in the same environment and with the same hardware that your end users will be using. Do is install a test system and make sure all the applications that your end users are going to be using work as you expect. You want to pay particular attention to line of business or custom applications for that particular business. You want to do this first in a test network. Then you want to do it on a test workstation in the live network. While you're testing, virtual machines can be very handy for setting up the test network. You want to make sure that the hardware you're using is suitable for Vista, particularly the amount of RAM. I'd recommend at least 2 gigabytes of RAM. Myself, I prefer 4 gigabytes or even more in a 64-bit version of Vista. RAM is very cheap now when you're deploying computers. The more RAM you have in them, the better. It really doesn't matter what operating system you're using. All operating systems seem to work better with more RAM. You want to make sure you run your tests on the same hardware. I'll repeat that again, that the end users are using. Vista on the wrong hardware can be a very painful experience. Once you've tested Vista, I would pick a few end users who are receptive to change and have them test Vista. You don't want to surprise the end users with Vista. You don't want to all of a sudden come in one day and say, okay, we're switching to Vista. You want to keep them in the loop while you're doing your testing, let them know how the testing's going, and a timeline for when they will be offered Vista. And I'd like to emphasize that, offer and not forced. It's really important that the end user doesn't feel forced to make a change. The biggest obstacle to overcome when you're changing to something like Vista is the end user resistance. A lot of end users have the perception that Vista is flawed. Apple's done a really amazing advertising campaign that most people have bought into, at least on some level. I like to offer end users a choice of whatever OS they want. It may seem like a nightmare for support for an IT pro, but I look at it from a different perspective. My job is to help the end users be more productive. If an end user is productive and likes their work environment, my job is easier as I have less support calls due to end user dissatisfaction and frustration. If the user is happy with their environment, the support calls are usually more about technical issues, which I can easily track down and fix. So if you give the end user a choice, and Vista is there and is properly managed, I find most of the users will gradually migrate to it. They see others using Vista and liking Vista. More importantly, they'll see that the Vista users are more productive. Most users don't really care what operating system they're using. They just want to get the job done. Vista managed by Active Directory is currently the best way to do that.
Are there any sort of tools that they can be used to sort of check the hardware? You talked about ensuring that the hardware is going to be a good fit.
Microsoft has a, if you go to microsoft.com/Vista, you'll end up on the Vista homepage. On there, you'll find a link to a tool which will tell you if a system is compatible with Vista or not. You would download the tool, run it on the computer, and then you can find out. It's also on the Vista DVD. You can pop the DVD in, and there's a tool to run to see if the hardware is compatible with Vista. Almost any computer you buy now is going to be compatible. Computers older than 2 or 3 years old, I would test them first, but any new computer should be compatible. The key is having lots of RAM.
Okay, now let's say the IT Pro has gone through this process of testing and so forth and rolling out Windows Vista. What are your top 5 tips then for managing the Windows Vista environment?
Well, my top tip would be you need an Active Directory-based network. That's not just Vista, that's any Windows client. Active Directory has the benefits of Active Directory, just they outweigh any increased complexity. A lot of people with smaller networks say, oh, Active Directory is too complex, I don't want to install it. If you install something like a small business server, it's very easy to manage. You know, if someone that has a basic understanding of Windows can manage the Active Directory. The other thing I'll go back to is you want a test network set up so that you can test things before you deploy them. One of the biggest tips for managing Vista would be create a shortcut to the Microsoft TechNet Vista homepage on your desktop. All of the documentation for Vista is there. You can access forums and news groups to ask questions. You can download white papers, step-by-step guides to do things. I spend more time on TechNet than any other site on the Internet. My next tip would be, so you want to become very familiar with your favorite search engine and the advanced features of it. The Internet has become a vast echo chamber, and most searches that you do are pretty much useless because you see the same thing repeated over and over and over. So you want to go into the advanced search features of your search engine, use the site parameter to search particular sites like Microsoft.com or TechNet. You really want to be familiar with TechNet and your favorite search engine. And lastly, you really want to learn the task scheduler in Vista. It's very powerful, has many features that XP task scheduler didn't have, and you can set tasks through group policy with Active Directory that allow you to manage the Vista computers. I think that pretty much covers it as far as the tips for managing it. Basically, you want to have Active Directory.
Finally, what are 5 little-known gems about working with Windows Vista?
Oh, boy, there's lots of things that we could go on about here. One thing that most people don't use that much is the Start Search. When you click on the Start menu or the Start Orb, whatever you want to call it, and there's a little box there that says Start Search. A lot of people complain about the search feature in Vista. This really baffles me. For me, it's the best thing in Vista. You can find anything you want without ever leaving your keyboard. You press the Windows key, and you just start typing what you want. You can type somebody's name. You can search for programs, emails, whatever you want. If you want to use the device manager, you just start typing it. As soon as it pops up in the list, you press the Enter key. If you want to find all the emails and documents from a certain person, you just start typing in their name. And as you're typing, the results all show up in the list. Everything, Excel documents, emails, Word documents, whatever to do with that person. Number 2, Vista's got some great troubleshooting tools. The Reliability Performance Monitor is probably one of the best tools. The event viewer is greatly improved from previous versions of Windows. The detail in the event logs is almost unbelievable. And with the new event viewer, you can drill down into the applications and services logs. You can quickly find out information about drivers, applications, problems with startup, problems with sleep. It makes it really easy to quickly pinpoint where a problem is so that you don't waste your time troubleshooting a bunch of wild goose chases. In XP and previous versions of Windows, you needed third-party utilities to drill down into that detail. Next, the help system in Vista is actually helpful. The first place you should look for anything when you're looking for help is in the help system. Quite often, you don't have to do anything else. One tool I use a lot is the snipping tool. And with Vista Business, which a lot of IT pros would be using, it's not available in the default install. So you have to go into the control panel and to turn on Windows features and turn on the tablet PC optional components before that will be available. And the last tip I've got is really for the administrator or possibly power users. You wouldn't want to give this to your normal users. Add a shortcut to an elevated command prompt on your desktop. Any programs you run from that will automatically run elevated, and you won't see the UAC prompts or anything else from those applications.
Now, Kerry, you're sort of a remarkable person in terms of your expertise and the nature of the level of support that you provide really to a very broad community, and you see a lot. So what are the top five challenges and their solutions with Windows Vista that you hear about in your work with blogs, forums, and news groups?
Well, number one for sure right now is wireless networking. A lot of people have problems getting their computer connected wirelessly or keeping it connected wirelessly. And the problem mostly comes from the fact that a lot of the wireless access point manufacturers, particularly the lower cost ones and the consumer grade ones, to cut their costs, they haven't really implemented wireless networking according to the RFC standards. Vista uses a lot of the advanced networking features in the latest RFCs. This causes a lot of access points to not work properly with Vista. There's really no particular solution that I could recommend. Every case is different. The best place to start is to make sure the access point has the latest firmware from the manufacturer and the wireless NIC in the client has the latest driver. The next thing would probably be networking in general, and it's for many of the same reasons. The advanced networking features in Vista may not be compatible with older hardware and software. One thing a lot of IT pros will probably see is NAS devices, network attack storage. A lot of them use an embedded Linux with Samba server, and older versions of Samba server aren't compatible with the networking in Vista. And there's no real solution to that other than getting a firmware update for the device. If the manufacturer doesn't have that, that device is probably not going to work properly with Vista. Another challenge that it's not really a challenge, it's just people seem to struggle with it, is the lockdown file and registry permissions, or the ACLs, in Vista. Most people blame UAC for that, where it's not really UAC. UAC is just the messenger there telling you you're trying to do something that you can't do. The real problem is people aren't really used to dealing with a secure file system. The solution there is simple. Learn how to work with a secure file system. Learn what elevation is and what it means. People that have experience with Linux or OS X don't seem to have problems with this. If you only have Windows experience and you're used to running as an administrator all the time, you'll really struggle with this one, and you'll have to break a lot of old bad habits. Lastly, this used to be probably the main problem that people had with Vista, but it's starting to go away, and that's compatibility problems with older hardware and software. With hardware, there's not much you can do. If the manufacturer doesn't have a driver for it, you pretty much can't use that hardware with Vista. It's that simple. So if you have some hardware that you absolutely have to use, don't have that hooked up or running or use it with a Vista computer. Software isn't that simple. There's a lot of compatibility options built into Vista that you can use to help getting older software running. The first thing to do is just click on right-click on the shortcut and go into the compatibility settings, or run the compatibility wizard within Vista. That will get most programs working. If it still doesn't work, you want to make sure that both Vista and the program are as up-to-date as you can get them. Vista uses a feature called Shims that helps older programs run, and as Microsoft develops new Shims, they're pushed out through Windows updates, so just making sure Vista is up-to-date can sometimes get an older program running. Another thing is, strangely enough, make sure that UAC is enabled. Many people attempt to get older programs working by disabling UAC, and that may work sometimes, but in most cases, it actually hinders the process of getting an older program running. The most common reason older programs don't work is because they expect administrator access to the file system and to the registry, and they try to write to a system area, and that fails. If you've got UAC on, Vista intercepts and redirects a lot of these writes and puts them to a virtual registry and file system that's stored in the user's profile, so that the program thinks that the write has worked, and Vista keeps track of these, and when the program tries to read them, it reads them from the virtual area rather than the real area. If you turn UAC off, all of that quits working. The program may silently fail. You'll have no idea why, and it can be very hard to troubleshoot. If none of those work and it's a program that you really need to get running, like a custom line of business application, you can use something like Process Monitor from the SysInternals team at Microsoft. It can be a very exhaustive process. You have to monitor the program, check exactly what registry keys and files are being accessed, what they're trying to do with them, and then go in and change the permissions on just those keys and files to allow the program to run. I personally don't spend too much time getting older programs to run anymore, unless it's a custom program like that that you really have to run. If what I figure by now, if a developer hasn't updated their software to work with Vista, they're way out of date, their program's not current anymore, and it makes you wonder how competent a developer they are if they haven't updated their program after a couple of years. Usually, you can find an alternative program that will work just as well. I would like to mention just again, user expectations. The resistance to change is really hard to overcome, and you have to sell your end users on Vista.
Can you talk more about this whole area of service packs for Vista and maybe profile what's already available and what you see coming out?
Well, Service Pack 1 has been available for a while. Highly recommend, if you haven't deployed Service Pack 1, that you do it. It has a lot of compatibility updates, a lot of the shims I talked about. It's whenever a new Service Pack for Windows comes out, you're always, the IT pro, you're always a little bit leery on making a change to your network. And I would recommend wait a month or so after a service pack is released, make sure it's working okay on other people's systems, there's no major problems. But you want to get service packs deployed as soon as you can. Service Pack 2 is in beta testing now. I'm not sure the exact release schedule, but so far what I've seen and heard from the beta testing, it's working very well, and I would expect that to come out sometime this year.
Here you have this great opportunity because of the tremendous knowledge and expertise you have and the clients that you support and so on, that you've been able to see sort of what are the best resources for working with Vista. Can you get into more detail about these?
Well, a lot of them I've already mentioned. Number one best resource is probably the built-in help system. Maybe not the best resource, but it's the first place you should look. TechNet is amazing. There's so much information on there that it can sometimes be hard to find it, and then your favorite search engine comes into play. Online forums and news groups, some of those you can access through TechNet. Other ones, just do a search for Vista Help, and you'll find lots of online forums. Webcasts and podcasts, online chats and live meetings, those can sometimes be hard to find. If you sign up for some of the newsletters on TechNets or go to some of the blogs you'll find on TechNet, you'll find lots of chances for online chats with various product teams within Windows, and you can get a lot of information from them. So basically, the built-in help system, and from there, it's probably access the internet and your peers with online forums and news groups.
Do you have any sort of preferences in terms of people who do presentations or podcasts, for example?
Not necessarily. I spend a lot of time looking at webcasts and podcasts, and sometimes you may think it's a waste of time, but you'll usually find one or two gems in every webcast or podcast. I don't really have any favorites.
Carrie, if you can now look into your crystal ball, I mean, what do you see in terms of the future of client operating systems, and what should IT pros be preparing for?
Boy, that's a really hard question. The only thing I can say with any certainty is things will change. What they'll change to, I really don't have any idea. Cloud computing is on the horizon. It's probably going to become important, but how? I really don't know. Personally, I really don't like the idea of not being in control of my data, but that may just be a personal prejudice that I'll have to overcome. Windows 7 is on the horizon. Microsoft's been very secretive about it, but it has been released a little bit to the public, some of the early milestone builds now, so people have had a look at it. So far, it looks like Windows 7 is going to be an easy transition from Vista. Microsoft operating systems seem to go in stages where there's a large step followed by a few small steps with their releases. Vista was a very large step. Windows 7 looks like it's going to be a small one. Very long term, I see operating systems becoming almost irrelevant. With virtualization, I see applications becoming or running in their own virtual environment, with each application having its own user interface or sort of operating system best suited to it as part of the application. An application developer would write their own user interface, and they could license one from a user interface developer, and the OS itself on the computer would just be a virtualization layer that allows the user interface to interact with the hardware. That way the application can run on any hardware or even in the cloud as long as the computer supports the calls to the virtualization layer. So I see very long-term operating systems becoming almost irrelevant. In the Western industrialized nations, we've been very privileged so far when it comes to the Internet. Its use has mostly been governed in ways that are very much to our advantage. And much of the rest of the world, possibly majority of the rest of the world, does not see things the same way we do when it comes to the Internet. They want a lot more say in how the Internet works, and they're probably going to get it over time. At the same time, the current infrastructure of the Internet is becoming overloaded. Traffic shaping of some sort is inevitable. And the combination of these two factors could drastically change how the Internet works and how the costs associated with it are charged. And I see that it's the way it's headed, we may end up with something like the existing worldwide phone system, where it's a very fractured system of distinct networks controlled by governments and corporations. So depending where you connect to the Internet, you may have different costs associated. If you're connected in Canada and you want to access a web page on a server in Turkey or the UK or somewhere else, it may be like a long-distance charge where you have to pay more than if you're accessing a web page on a server in Canada. Some countries want to really the Internet. You may need some kind of an electronic passport before you're allowed to surf in some countries. These are all hypothetical things, but you know, the Internet is definitely going to change, and we don't really know how it's going to change yet. So, and they will really affect how people use their computers. It could be a drastic change.
Hey, Carrie, can you share one or more stories from your work?
Well, I've got a story, but not really related to my work. More about how people think about computers and technology and how we get caught up in you know, which operating system is best, which program is best, and, you know, we're so caught when you watch young children use computers or technology, it's very surprising and sometimes inspiring. An example is my girlfriend's grandson. He's 6 years old. He switches easily between Vista and XP. Or for that matter, his Nintendo Wii or an Xbox 360. Some of the games have bizarre user interfaces that take me forever to try and figure out. He just plays them. He doesn't care. He doesn't ask how to do something. He doesn't read the instructions. He just looks at the screen, figures it out, and does it. He's got no preconceived ideas about how things are supposed to work. One time I asked him which computer he prefers, mine, which is a Vista laptop, or my girlfriend's, which is an XP desktop. And his answer was my girlfriend's. And I thought, oh, great, he likes XP over Vista. So I asked him why. It was nothing to do with anything to do with the computer, the laptop, the size of the screen, Vista, XP, or anything. It was the content. He says, she's got better games and more pictures on hers. So for the kids, it's all about the content. How they access the content doesn't mean anything to them. And I think we could all learn a lesson from that.
So outside of this whole area of work and so on, I mean, what do you do to have fun, or which devices do you like the most?
Well, where I have the most fun is probably nothing to do with computers. I enjoy spending time with my family. I really enjoy volunteering. The 2010 Olympics are happening basically in my hometown. I'm located in between Vancouver and Whistler. So I volunteered to help with the ski jumping event. So I spend time up at the Whistler Olympic Park with the precursor events, Continental Cup and World Cup ski jumping and Nordic combined events. I really enjoy that. I volunteer at the Whistler or the Squamish Volunteer Center, where we interview people that are volunteering for the Olympics. Probably where I have my most fun, though, is learning new things. I really enjoy learning new skills.
You know, we've covered a lot of ground here, so let's kind of turn this around. If you were doing this interview, what three questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Well, your questions have been very good, so I don't know if I could come up with three. Probably a couple. One question that is I get asked a lot is, why does Vista have such a bad reputation? Is it flawed? What's wrong with it? The answer, oh boy, it could take hours to fully explain, but basically what I found is it boils down to this. People don't like change. Microsoft waited too long between major operating system releases, and people weren't used to upgrading Windows anymore, so they're resistant to that change. Hardware support, for whatever reason, and I've heard several plausible reasons, was very poor when Vista was released, so that caused a lot of problems. The blogosphere or the internet, whatever you want to call it, has turned into a huge echo chamber where things get repeated over and over and over until they become the accepted truth, even if they're not the truth. And lastly, Apple ran a genius advertising campaign that Microsoft failed to respond to, and that perception got into people's minds. Another question I get asked a lot is, when did you start using Vista and why? And I started using Vista very early in the beta program. It was still called Longhorn at that point. And I realized that Vista had a chance at decent security that was at least on a par with Linux and OS X, if not better than them. And as it turns out, I think my initial impressions were pretty close to being correct. It's much more secure than XP. XP cannot even be made as secure as Vista with third-party utilities. Vista is very secure. It's hard to say at this point if it's as secure as Linux or OS X, as they're not targeted as much as Vista. But I think it's a pretty close call, with all three would be winning in certain categories to do with security. Other than that, I think your questions have been very good. I think they've covered most of the things that I usually get asked.
There's this other topic, and that's about this UN, United Nations, that is founded International Federation for Information Processing, or IFIP. And they have this program called IP3, which stands for the Professional Practice Partnership Program. and this is going to be implemented in 2009, and really talks about IT as a recognized profession with global standards and a code of ethics and widely adopted professional certification. Can you comment on this?
Well, I'm probably not a good person to ask because I've worked for myself for the past 30 years, and I haven't really seen a need to have certifications for myself. The only current certification I hold is Microsoft Certified Professional, and the only reason I got that was I needed that to keep my Microsoft Action Pack subscription current. I do spend a lot of time and money on training, but because I'm my own employer and don't need the actual certification, I rarely end up taking the tests. I just take the course and for the knowledge, because the knowledge is important to me. Almost all of my business is word of mouth. I've never had anybody ask me what certifications I hold. But all that said, I really understand the need for certifications, and I think a standard set of international certifications, and more importantly, a code of ethics, is an excellent idea and very important. I would actually consider that myself just because of the code of ethics. The IT industry really needs that, and the public really needs it. Currently, certifications don't mean much to the public. They're really just something to put on a job resume, and this program could hopefully change all that. I really hope it does.
Gary, do you have any favorite URLs that you want to share with the audience at all?
Well, there's my Vista Help website, which is vistahelp.ca. There's Microsoft TechNet, which I think if you just go to Microsoft.com/TechNet, you'll end up there. I don't know the URL off the top of my head. Other than that, no, not really.
Gary, we will continue to follow your significant contributions, and we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
This concludes our interview with Gary Brown, an international authority in Windows, a widely acknowledged networking expert, a Microsoft Client Operating Systems Windows Desktop Experience Most Valuable Professional.